Good evening, and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, June 10th, 2015. Civil society groups say they are campaigning for peace in the month before Independence Day.
We are mobilizing the religious groups to have a fasting for peace, which the fasting we are starting on the 1st of July until the 9th. That 1 week, it will be a fasting week to ensure that we fast before Independence Day, to ensure that peace prevails.
And the rebels say they've appointed a governor for Jonglei State, but the government rejects the idea.
This is not the first time for the rebels to appoint governors that are peculiar to the whole situation, when in actual fact, they are appointing governors in the places they don't even control. This is not new. We see it as a negotiating position for the rebels.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. As negotiators try to get the IGAD-led peace talks off the ground once again in Addis Ababa, momentum is building in South Sudan for grassroots activism versus official negotiations, which have produced little, if anything. South Sudanese civil society activists say they'll spend the run-up to the July 9th Independence Day anniversary as a time to campaign for peace. Meanwhile, the head of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan and Sudan says IGAD must overhaul its process by strengthening the Arusha Peace Initiative. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Edmond Yakane, executive director of the Community Empowerment for Progress Organization, or CEPO, says the next few weeks of plenty activities are a natural progression of civil society's mounting calls for restoration of peace in South Sudan. He says the move is
aiming at mobilizing our communities in order to generate a home-based pressure on the warring parties, in order to push the warring parties to attain peace because we are tired of the war. We are aiming at the AU summit, which is going on now in South Africa, in Joburg, about this bringing South Sudan to the agenda.
Yakane says the campaign will be characterized by simultaneous activities in most of South Sudan's state capitals, except Malakal and Bentiu, because of insecurity in those areas. Yakane says they will encourage national and international media organizations to talk to ordinary citizens about the peace campaign.
We shall be organizing peaceful protests in the state capital. We are dedicating a special prayer for peace on every Friday and every Sunday. And within that also we have a fasting. We are mobilizing the religious groups to have a fasting for peace, which the fasting we are starting on the 1st of July until the 9th. That 1 week, it will be a fasting week to ensure that we fast before Independence Day, to ensure that peace prevails.
Linda Hassan is the director of the Women's Training Program, one of the civil society organizations in Western Bahr El Ghazal, partnering with the CEPO. She says the campaign enables the public to realize that they have a part to play in the peace process.
This campaign will help in sensitizing the authorities, including the other partners, to understand that peace is the first priority of the grassroots community. The issue of this peace talk now is not very clear to the community. By doing this campaign, help people to advocate for this issue.
On Tuesday, Archbishop Daniel Dengbul of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan and Sudan said the warring parties have failed to reach a final peace agreement after a year and a half of negotiations because they are not focusing on the right issues. Bull says that the two sides must deviate from their past behavior of making demands at the talks because it is clear they have only resulted in more pain and tragedy.
We don't want you to negotiate on your position and people are being killed. If they wanted to negotiate, let them put the people of South Sudan first. So I wanted to be very clear to my brothers and sisters who are now talking. We are not with you killing our people. And you are talking, who will become what? That is not what we are for.
Al-Hajj Alimore Ali, a South Sudanese Muslim scholar, agrees.
If they need power, it will be up to the people of South Sudan now to decide their destiny by electing the right leader for them thereafter.
A proposed power-sharing government has been under discussion, but the exact terms of such of a government were not finalized by IGAD's March 5th deadline. As this latest round of talks get underway in Ethiopia, new fighting has erupted in parts of Jonglei, Unity and Upper Nile states. Bull says both sides are at fault.
The more you keep people fighting, the more you deepen the hatred. So when the hatred becomes deeper, that worries us. But you stop it now, then you can bring your people back. So we are worried that our people should not be taken to that far. We want them to be brought home now, before that hatred goes down. Because hatred grows to death.
Bull says IGAD should strengthen the Arusha Agreement, which was initiated by the Tanzanian ruling party, Chama cha Mapinduzi, and AMT at reunifying South Sudan's SPLM party.
Once you united the family of SPLM, then where will be the problem come from? It is because they are not agreeing in the party. That's why there is fighting. So if the party is unified, automatically the rest of the thing will become easy.
Ali does not see it that way.
The Arusha Peace Initiative is a good one, though, but cannot really bring a final peace, simply because that one will only address the issues of the ruling party, which is the SPLM. Yet South Sudan is a multi-party democracy, where we have a lot of other political parties, which are also complaining of their own need.
Last week, a former SPLM political detainee who returned to Juba said a move is underway to combine the IGAD-led talks and the Arusha Peace Initiative in order to strengthen South Sudan's prospects for peace. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
The rebel group, led by former Vice President Riek Machar, has appointed a new governor for Jonglei State. Not Jonglei State as it currently is, but a smaller Jonglei State that is part of the rebels' proposed new map of South Sudan. The government in Juba is pushing back at the appointment, saying the rebels have no right to make such decisions on behalf of the people of South Sudan. VOA fellow Kaltumo Vanessa has this report.
The appointment of the executive for Jonglei State follows a decision by Machar's group to divide South Sudan into 21 states instead of the 10 current states. The new way of dividing the country is based on voting districts that were established under British colonial rule, which began in 1896 and ended when World War II broke out in 1939. Machar spokesperson James Gadat Dak says the rebel leader appointed the new Jonglei State governor recently.
On the 30th of May, that's when the chairman appointed our new governor for Jonglei State. Actually, the first governor appointed by our group. His name is Alir Luet.
Gadat says Machar's rebel group has already appointed governor in several new states.
We have already appointed many, particularly in Greater Upper Nile State. We have appointed governors for Bay State, for Power State, for Pibo. Also, we have appointed governor for Sobadi State, and we have appointed governor for Northern Bahar Ghazali State, and also for Eastern Equatorial State. So, yes, we are in the process of making sure that all the 21 states have governors appointed.
But President Salva Kiir's spokesperson, Aten Wek Aten, says Machar has no right to make the appointment.
This is not the first time for the rebels to appoint governors that are peculiar to their whole situation, when in actual fact they are appointing governors in the places they don't even control. This is not new. We see it as a negotiating position for the rebels.
In an order Machar issued early this year creating 21 states, Jonglei was divided into four states called Bieh, Pibo, Pou, and Jonglei. Gadat says the expanded number of states is part of the proposal to introduce a federal system of governance in South Sudan. President Kiir has spoken out against federalism in the past, and the proposal to give more power to the state in South Sudan is said to be one of the issues that is being discussed at peace talk in Addis Ababa.
federalism has been a demand for our people since 1947. We wish that the government would also agree to this, because it is not our creation. It has been a popular demand of our people. We urge our people and call our citizens to support this new policy for creation of 21 states, because this is good for us. It is good for the development of the country. It is good for managing the diversity in our country.
Presidential spokesperson Ateng says it is not for the rebels to decide what system of governance South Sudan should have.
The prerogative of dividing South Sudan into more states lies with the people of South Sudan. It's not a matter for any political group to try to impose. Government of South Sudan is the legitimate government that is implementing the constitution of the Republic of South Sudan. We adopt the decentralized system of government. Something, if there is any need to change, you will have to go back to the people of South Sudan to decide on it over a referendum.
Last year, South Sudanese media bosses said in a letter sent to Information Minister Michael Makwee that individuals claiming to work for the security service ordered editors not to publish any article on federalism debate. At the time, Ate denied that the government has banned the public debate about federalism. Ate said President Kiir's priority is to restore peace in South Sudan, not to engage in a debate about what system of governance the country should have. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa in Washington.
As Western Bahar Ghazal State's security situation continues to deteriorate, the governor has issued a shoot-to-kill order on robbers. Governor Rizik Zakaria Hassan today instructed all state police, wildlife, and prison authorities to follow the new order and announced a midnight curfew. Dimo Silva Oriello has more for VOA from WOW.
Governor Zakaria says the harsh new measures are necessary to prevent criminals from even thinking about looting a home. He notes in one recent incident, one civilian was killed during an attempted robbery. And despite the presence of police patrols every night in Western Bahar Ghazal, in and around WOW town, the governor says homes and shops have been looted on a daily basis over the past few weeks. He's speaking in Arabic, Zakaria told authorities the suit to kill order is in response to those robberies.
We do not want to hear that armed robbers came and looted a shop or home. If you know he is a thief, you are allowed to shoot him dead. It is unbecoming that we have patrols at night and yet robberies are reported. Either you are a thief or there is another thief. We need you to protect WOW town.
In order to do this effectively, Rizik says, WOW municipal town has been divided into five zones with more than 200 patrol forces. He says each zone will report to WOW police headquarters about a robbery in progress.
They will patrol these five zones. First zone from Zande, Fahal, Dinka up to Girinti residential areas. Second zone runs from Falata, Sinka, Hadid, Musurusu to Lokoloko. Third zone is Haizalaba, Musifin to Nazareth. Fourth zone is Haikres, Zebelker, Zou, Jezira, and the fifth is Bara Sarji.
Zakaria instructed police officers to not keep a gun at home unless they are on duty. A citizen who asks to remain anonymous says the directive shows the state government is desperate to get control of internal security. He says it is carrying out jungle law as opposed to the civil laws the state has in place, under which criminals are to be considered innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Edmond Yakani, the head of Community for Empowerment and Progress Organization, or CEPO, welcomes the order but says citizens must do more to tell the police what is happening in their communities.
I think if the principle of shoot to kill comes under the mandate of self-protection or self-defense, then that
securities want to arrest someone and the person starts shooting at the security, the suspect starts shooting at the security is a very critical one.
Governor Zakaria says patrols in Wau Town will increase from 150 to 200. State authorities say the local police force will handle robberies and similar crimes in Wau, while SPLA forces will confront rebel activities in western Balgazali State. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio, reporting in Wau.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. An African shopping mall designed completely out of shipping containers. Can it happen in South Sudan? That story after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
What do you spend your leisure time doing?
My leisure time I spend mostly reading and watching documentary programs on TV. Because I'm adventurous, I want to learn new things and keep abreast with time.
I spend my leisure time with my kids, at times watching tellys, concentrating on their homeworks, listening to their problems, share views with them. Happy moments.
Reading books and listening to music. Because I love music, so the least chance I get, I listen to music.
I mostly get tired with my day activity. I go up and down and all that, so the slightest time I have, I want to have my peace of mind and just rest.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Yesterday, we reported that the National Assembly agreed it is time to take action and address problems surrounding letters of credit, or LCs. One step lawmakers suggested for fixing the way LCs are allocated is to put the Bank of South Sudan in charge of issuing them, instead of the Finance Ministry. But when that option was put to Central Bank Governor Cornelio Corium, he said he does not want the burden of deciding who should be given a letter of credit. Philip Thonaleu has the story for VOA from Juba.
In South Sudan, getting a letter of credit gives an individual or company access to U.S. dollars. With the money a merchant or organization gets in form of a letter of credit, they are supposed to import goods that will benefit the country. But a parliamentary investigation has shown that this is not always the case. In fact, lawmakers say some $600 million worth of LC PAN are unaccounted for. Koryam says a recent parliamentary investigation uncovered numerous problems with LCs. He says it will be difficult to explain to merchants that letters of credit will not be issued to everyone who asks for them because not all business people or companies are importers. And yet, he says, that is how LCs should be handled.
It can only be reduced to very, very, very few people, and the rest of people take it from here. If things are brought to Juba, people can take it from here and take it wherever they would want. And not everybody who has never gone out of this country can be a trader and can be an importer. He doesn't know the ABC of the foreign trade, and he will almost kill you if you say no. So it is not an easy thing.
Koryam says many companies and individuals apply for LCs. In some cases, Koryam says local traders who are given an LC sell it to foreign businesses. Because of the worsening economic situation and the 18-month-old conflict in South Sudan, Koryam says, many foreign investors are pulling out of South Sudan and taking their dollars with them.
When they move out their capital, and we shall never see those dollars, they will move out our borders and it is a loss. And that is what is capital flight. And it is an issue the central bank is interested not to see happening.
Lual Achuek is a Jonglei State lawmaker and the director of the Juba-based think tank, the Ebony Center for Strategic Studies. He agrees that there are too many merchants and businesses in South Sudan that claim to be involved in importing goods.
Our problem here is almost everybody is an importer, has a license. That cannot work. So you have to reduce the number of importers to your economy in order to manage them.
Yesterday, when Parliament was presented with a report of the investigation into the disappearing letters of credit, Achweg told his fellow lawmakers that the LC system should be managed by the central bank. But Koryom says the bank cannot oversee LCs on its own. He says the bank needs help. Achweg conceded that the rules surrounding LCs should be tightened up. He also suggested that the government set up a fall of reserve foreign currency for purchase of strategic commodities, including food, fuel, and medicines. And Achweg says the ministries of trade and finance, which currently have oversight of LCs, should ban traders from importing some food commodities which are produced locally.
And if you do that, and for me, when I see prices going up of imported goods, I feel happy.
Lawmakers say they believe that giving the central bank oversight of LCs will help to better monitoring of business people and companies that apply for letters of credit. The National Assembly says this will help South Sudan to accurately track what happens to the millions of dollars allocated every year in the form of letters of credit, which will in turn reduce fraud and boost the economy. For BOA News, I'm Philip Thonaleo in Juba.
We now shift to Burundi, where presidential elections are being delayed following protests against the president's bid for a third term in office. VOA's Gabe Joslow reports the move comes as regional bodies urge that dialogue be continued with the opposition to resolve the political crisis in the country.
Burundi's president, Pierre Nkurunziza, issued a decree late Tuesday postponing the presidential vote to July 15th, about 2 weeks later than initially planned. Parliamentary elections have also been pushed back about a month and are now scheduled to be held June 29th. Presidential spokesman Gervais Abayeho told VOA the new timetable is designed to give the opposition time to organize for the vote.
The opposition parties were claiming that they didn't have enough time to campaign given the situation that was prevailing here, so that they can be given ample time to do so. That is the motivation behind that.
Opposition parties and civil society activists have led weeks of street protests against President Nkurunziza's plans to run for a third term in office, which opponents say would be against the law. Some opposition leaders rejected the new timetable for elections when it was first proposed by the country's Electoral Commission. A spokesman for an opposition coalition told VOA Daybreak Africa Tuesday the commission did not have the legal mandate to change the dates. The election delay is in line with recommendations put forward last month by East African heads of state. Meantime, the International Conference of the Great Lakes region has urged the government to continue a national dialogue with members of the opposition and civil society to find a way out of the current crisis. Ambei Ligabo is the director of the ICGLR Governance and Democracy Program.
We are optimistic that both parties can see sense in the need to have dialogue to avoid any violence and also disruption of economic and trade activities among member states of ICGLR.
The United Nations has raised concerns about an escalation in political violence around the polls. On Tuesday, the High Commissioner for Human Rights, Zaid Ra'ad Al Hussein, said the United Nations has been receiving deeply worrying accounts of executions, abductions, and other violent acts attributed to pro-government militia. Gabe Joslow, VOA News, Nairobi.
A shopping mall constructed entirely out of shipping containers is nearing completion in Johannesburg, South Africa. The architectural design is called 27 Boxes because each container is 27 square meters. It is a first for Africa and is modeled on similar projects in London, Paris, and New Zealand. Darren Taylor has more.
Construction workers add finishing touches to the 27 Boxes project in the creative Johannesburg suburb of Melville. Its creator is Satik Group structural engineer and architect Arthur Blake.
We had extremely limited funds. It continued to rain. As we went down, we got rock, which delayed the project. We've never done a retail development. This one took me by surprise at how long it would actually take.
Blake says he didn't want to build just another shopping mall, of which the city has plenty.
They've got no character. They're just brick buildings.
he wanted to do something different at the site, something he'd never before attempted, to construct an affordable shopping space entirely from shipping containers. The recycled material is significantly cheaper to build with than conventional steel, brick and mortar. This project cost about $2.5 million, as opposed to $3.5 million for a traditional build. But from the outset, says Blake, there were plenty of skeptics.
People just said containers are shacks on steroids.
One of the doubters was Blake's colleague, project marketing manager Mandy Shave.
I thought shipping containers, running a mall within shipping containers, how's it going to work? How are they going to fit?
But Blake's vision of completing the development for Melville's dreamers and artists, as he calls his soon-to-be tenants, wouldn't die.
This unique opportunity just started developing in my mind that we could create a space for these guys. Simultaneously, we could develop the park into a very artisanal zone.
Shave says about 100 containers will be rented to people selling products you won't easily find at a mall packed with franchise stores. From craft beer to Philly cheesesteaks and wood-fired bread to handmade jewelry and clothing.
And we've done a very good job to make sure that we have a very good mix of people, that it's people who've got, you know, high-end, beautiful quality products, a strong focus on making sure it is artists, and then giving them an opportunity to open a store.
On average, the containers will cost about $400 a month to rent, much cheaper than stores in the big malls, which can easily cost 10 times more. This has made it possible for people like Sean Mulroe to be one of 27 Box's first tenants.
I'm going to be opening a nursery. I'm going to be mostly selling veggies and herbs and hopefully selling fresh herbs and veggies to the little restaurants that are opening as well, so we can all keep organic and fresh.
Shave says 27 Boxes, with its many open spaces, will be one of the most environmentally friendly shopping areas ever in South Africa.
The green aspect of using a shipping container is also what is attracting a lot of people to go, wow, this is so different. I didn't realize you could do this with a shipping container.
Blake says several internationally renowned architects have congratulated him on what he describes as his dream project. And 27 Boxes is set to open within a few weeks. Darren Taylor for VOA News, Johannesburg.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We leave you with the song Get Up by South Sudanese rap superstar Emmanuel Jal.
Yeah. They say all walk and no play makes me a dull boy. But you know what I say? I gotta get up. Sometimes I feel like my life just ain't mine. I'm living out of my suitcase from one place to another place. Hey, I get a chance sometimes. I make a few dollars sometimes. I'm thinking I deserve a night in the town, having fun with my friends around. Hey, I gotta get up.
We're listening to South Sudanese artist Emmanuel Jal with the song Get Up. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.